Welcome to Parents Perspective. You said you'd take me. 9-year-old Kevin grimaced at his sister. Mom, Kelly's a liar. I said I'd take you if you wanted to get something from the store, retorted 16-year-old Kelly. But not if you're going to blow your whole allowance and your chore money, too. Mom, would you put some brains in his head? Okay, guys. Penny appeared at the front door. That's enough yelling. Kevin, she looked at her third grader. Are you sure you want to spend all your money? Kevin nodded earnestly. I told you I wanted to get that same game that Benji has, and it's my money. Penny looked at her daughter. It is his money, you know. Kelly's eyes grew wide. Mom! From a parent's perspective, what should we know about helping our kids manage money? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has spent many years working with math students. Brian Crane has worked in education for 35 years, first as a classroom teacher for everything from general math to advanced placement calculus. For the last 7 years, he has been a high school mathematics instructional specialist for Montgomery County, Maryland Public Schools. He has also taught at community colleges. Brian is the father of two, ages 25 and 17. Welcome to Parents Perspective, Brian.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So what would you say is the biggest trap kids fall into when trying to manage their own money?
Kids really don't have an idea in terms of the difference between wants and needs. Do they need something or do they want something? And I know with my sons, I always had that, not quite an argument with them, but always had the discussion, you know, do you really need this or do you just want it? And in a lot of ways with my sons, I try to get them almost to do a pros and cons kind of a listing where how much money do I have? I want this. I think I need this. Why do I need it? Sometimes they figured out that they really didn't need what they, quote, wanted. So that's one of the bigger traps they get into. Also, I think they really have a difficult time with what I like to call relative value. They don't know the relative value between an item, let's say, that might cost $300 and an item that might cost $100, just in terms of how much use will they get out of the item, just in terms of bang for the buck, I guess. They will spend $200 or $300 on something, then be out of money, and then say, oh, well, gee, now I really want slash need something else.
It's interesting. My father, who was of the generation who went through the Great Depression, always drummed into our heads, it's not a bargain if you don't need it.
Right.
Mm-hmm. How do kids think of money and financial resources differently from adults?
I think a lot of times kids think short term. And adults, for the most part, usually try to think long term. Kids see what they want or what they need now, or even, let's say, a month down the line, or in terms of saving something. I know my sons never wanted to save more than, let's say, 3 to 4 weeks on something. If they couldn't get something within 3 to 4 weeks, then it wasn't worth saving for. I think adults, in a lot of ways, really have to kind of think long term. I've got these expenses that come up every month. Or if I want to actually buy something that's relatively expensive, like a car, how am I going to plan for that? I know that if I buy a car, I'm going to have payments for 5 years. For kids, it's like 5 years is forever. And they're not going to think that long term, which makes it difficult in terms of teaching kids that way. Because for them, 5 years is an eternity.
We had an expert on adolescent brain development a while back, and one of the shockers that he gave to us was the idea that the part of the brain, I think it's the frontal lobe, that has to do with planning, delayed gratification, all that kind of stuff that we expect teenagers to be able to gear into, doesn't fully develop until kids are 21,
wow.
All you parents of teenagers out there. So that would seem to me to be a big problem when you're talking about delayed gratification and planning and allocating money.
Sometimes kids, particularly when they're younger, expect parents to buy things for them. And obviously, if you've got a 10-year-old that needs a pair of shoes, you go out and buy them a pair of shoes. As they get older, you try to make that transfer between parents providing everything and the teenager starting to provide for him or herself.
I remember my middle son was the first of my kids to get to the point where he asked for a budget. He actually asked for an allowance of how much he could spend on clothing because he wanted some things with labels, with brand names. Other children were wearing certain kinds of T-shirts or shorts. He wanted them instead of going to the places I went to get him clothes as bargains. So we did it that way. And he had a much more limited wardrobe, but he was as happy as he could be about it.
One of the things with my sons is that I've got $30 that I'm going to provide you for an item. Let's say a pair of shoes, a pair of slacks. If you want the brand name, then you have to go and get the money to make up that difference. And that worked very well with both my boys.
What kinds of messages does the adult world send kids about money? Sometimes I think even unintentionally we're setting examples or we're doing things in our own lives that send messages.
The main message that adults send, and whether that's parents or TV advertising, is that everything is easy to buy. You don't have to have the money to buy anything anymore. You don't have to worry about it. You can pay it off at $100 a month, $200 a month, 0% interest for the first year. Of course, not figuring out that the interest is going to accrue if you're not going to pay off things early. And I really think that's the message that the adult world sends.
If parents want the latest kind of boots, say, or the latest kind of jacket or coat, and they go out and buy it for themselves with the credit card, that sends a message to the kids, hey, mom can get those boots. I can get them too. Or I can get whatever bicycle I wanted or whatever kind of MP3 player I wanted. I remember my nephew said to his mother, well, we can get more money. You just go to that machine, roll down your window, and out comes the money.
Yes, for the longest time, both of my sons, particularly when they were young, thought exactly that. And the hard part was this money's actually coming from the money I've earned. It's not free money. It's the same way with the credit card. You pay with the credit card, you go away. Kids never see the money. Nowadays, we never see the money anymore. Growing up, you always basically saw your money. You had to go to the bank every Friday. If you wanted the money, you went to the bank, you stood in line, and you got your money and it was in your hand. You say, okay, I've got this much money. You could put some of it into a savings account or whatever, but it was still kind of in your hand. Nowadays, I don't think my 17-year-old really sees any more than, let's say, $20 or $30 at a time. Because when he's working, he gets a check, then, of course, he usually spends it. But you really don't see that money anymore. And adults don't see that money anymore. We have direct deposit.
Which means, really, in terms of human nature, when it's not concrete, it's a whole lot harder to sort of understand
where
it comes and where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I go to the grocery store and you pay by a credit card and they say, would you like money back? I always think, yeah, I would, but then I realize where it comes from.
It's mine. Mm-hmm. I remember when my mother got her first credit card, and it was like this magical thing. We called it the charger card, and it was to a local small department store. And the missing piece was I never saw a bill. My parents never, ever shared any kind of bills with me. So I never connected that charger card with how much money had to be earned to cover its expenses.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on helping kids manage money.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Brian Crane about kids managing money. How can parents and other adult role models affect kids' perceptions about money in productive ways?
Probably the best way is to always be talking about it. What I mean is if you go to the store, we can talk in terms of young kids, you can talk about unit pricing. If the news comes on, they start talking about the financial situation, you talk with your kids about that. I really think just talking about things is probably one of the most productive ways of learning. When you go out, you can bring up mathematics in all kinds of contexts when you're out shopping in the mall. Just making kids aware of what's out there. If they see it, then at least it gives them something concrete to say, oh, okay, all this money is going out. So when they say, gee, can I go out and can I get a $200 item or whatever, you say, well, gee, we've got $300 a month set aside for incidentals or miscellaneous. And well, if we take $200 out for this, now we're talking, oh, gee, $100 left for the month, particularly if it's at the beginning of the month. It's involvement.
One of the things I was thinking about was when kids are in the car and you have to fill up the tank, that's pretty significant. And I would think maybe if you can make a comparison perhaps between, gee, it costs so much to fill up a tank, we would be able to do X with that amount normally, mm-hmm. but we need to use that money to fill up the gas tank.
Right. And my 17-year-old is finding out about that.
I mean, the hard way.
Yes. Well, he just got his license. I said, that's fine, but you got to think about purchasing gas. And then after the first month or so, he'd say, I don't have any money left because I'm putting it all into the gas tank.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the world.
Welcome to the world. But then you say, okay, well, now what are you going to learn from that? How can you reduce that expense so that you have more money to spend on the things you really want to spend money on instead of just gasoline? It comes down to priorities, and my first son, he works full-time and all, but originally when he started working, he would say, gee, where'd all my money go? I tell him, just keep a list of everything you spend your money on. Yeah, you don't have to really come up with a formal budget because, again, that word budget to a young adult is not a word that really makes sense a whole lot of times. But even just where do you spend your money?
When I got married, my husband and I determined that we needed to figure out what budget would be appropriate for the two of us in our first rented place to live and with two cars, one for each and that kind of thing. And so we had a notebook, which my husband to this day still has in a file cabinet, and he put a label on the front of it, the Tight Ship Company. And we had to write everything down in it. If I bought a package of gum, I had to write that down. If you made a long-distance telephone call, you had to make a note. You made a long-distance call, check the amount. It was really a project, but it guided us later on to figuring out how much were we spending each month and how much should we budget for certain things and how could we prioritize. What you're suggesting is a really wise idea.
And as we remember, you came up with a high school curriculum to help high schoolers with sort of real-world money issues.
It's a curriculum that we're going to be implementing in the next school year. Half of the curriculum is basically financial literacy. It'll be a course for juniors and seniors that actually lays out household budgeting, lays out if you buy something on credit, you have credit cards with different interest rates, how does that affect how long you're going to pay things off? If you take the minimum payment, how long will that take you to pay things off on a credit card and the like? So that we're hoping that the new curriculum that we are going to be implementing will really be helpful for students in that regard.
Sounds like it.
Yeah.
In the day-to-day management of a child's financial resources, let's begin with what do you think is the most appropriate age for a youngster to begin receiving what, for lack of a better term, is still called an allowance?
When you get to about 10, I think that's the point where kids really start being able to understand what savings actually means, not necessarily financial planning or budgeting, but being able to understand that money is a finite resource. And at that point, I think giving them the allowance that was always tied to doing things around the house or you didn't get it, I think 10 is really where kids begin to understand that.
And they can connect privileges or rewards with responsibility, I'm sure, around that age.
That's what they do. Again, younger, it's kind of hard for them to make that connection.
I always found it very difficult with my kids to assess what was realistic and appropriate to give them as an allowance. Any suggestions for how to come up with that?
When we started, when they turned 10, they got $10 every 2 weeks. When they turned 11, it went to $11 every 2 weeks, and so on and so forth. So basically, as they got older, they got a little bit more. You can, in terms of reassessing how much it should be, a lot of times just look at how they spend it. Again, $10, at least nowadays, doesn't go a whole long way. They can go out and buy a CD or something with it if they wanted to, or something else that they might like. But then it's also, in terms of, let's say, $10, it's not so much that they're going to be able to go out and spend it on a pair of blue jeans or a pair of shoes or something. So if they really want something, they get in the mind, okay, well, I am going to have to save for this.
I would guess that you have to take into consideration how much things cost for a child at a particular age. Because one of the mistakes I made, we gave our oldest son his lunch money as part of his allowance, and he bought lunch at school. And I didn't realize how much it cost to buy lunch at school. And one of his friends wised me up and said, you know, he doesn't have enough money to go to the movies with us because he's not getting enough allowance. And so sometimes he doesn't eat lunch. I was pretty horrified. So I think we kind of have to do some work behind the scenes.
You do. And it really is kind of a reassessment that you're doing in terms of how much you're giving your child. Because they do have social pressures, for example. So sometimes they would say, well, gee, you know, can I go to the movies? And you say, okay, fine. As a parent, you provide certain things above and beyond, obviously. But for that allowance, if you see it, they're just blowing it on things. Then you have to say, okay, well, if you're not going to take care of your money, then I'm not going to supplement. And I did that when my oldest started working. And then he said, well, I don't feel like working for a while now. I say, that's fine. But if you're not going to help yourself, then I'm not going to help. I always found that rewarding work once they get to be teenagers really was very effective in terms of how they handled their money or even what kind of support they could expect.
And there are motivations like senior proms or other kinds of events that kids want to be a part of, and they recognize, gee, this is going to cost a lot of money. I better figure out how I'm going to earn some.
Yes, really. Mm-hmm.
In an especially worrisome economic period, what advice do you have for parents helping kids to learn more about money management?
Kids seem afraid. I heard a young girl who was on television a few days ago with her family. When she was asked, is there anything she's worrying about that she hasn't shared with her parents? She said, yes, I'm really scared that we're going to have to move, that we're not going to be able to afford our house. And we're going to have to go someplace strange and new and different and leave everything familiar behind. So I think kids do have some fears when they hear on the news that maybe there are things to worry about economically.
I think it really becomes a teaching moment. Okay, you don't know what the future is going to hold. It can be a teaching moment in terms of always being prepared for the future. You don't know what the future is going to hold. And so if you plan for the future, and again, this can become in savings or even how you spend your money. I think that's probably the best thing parents can do for their kids now because you don't know. I went through, when I was younger, living paycheck to paycheck, and I was scared to death that my car was going to break down. So you start saying, okay, well, that better put some money away just in case this happens.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on helping kids learn to manage money.
For an audio CD of any Parents Perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C. 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Brian Crane about kids learning to manage money. This particular family, the mother had taught her daughter to go with her to thrift shops because the daughter wanted all these clothes, she's a young teenager. And the daughter said she was really surprised that she could get things in thrift shops. Nobody knew where she got it or how much she paid for it, but she could get more. That was a teaching moment, I think, in that family.
And the same thing comes with, for example, being able to evaluate advertising. What you're hearing on TV or even what you're reading in the paper when you see a sale for a certain item that it's 20% off. Well, it might be nice that it's 20% off, but it's still 80% of whatever the excessive retail price was, particularly if you go to a high-end kind of a store. Or even at 20% off, you could go someplace else and still even pay less.
I'm coming back to the idea of how children learn, and I'm thinking that the old business about the piggy bank isn't such a bad idea, because when we were talking about tangibles, it may be that in tough economic times, if kids can see something tangible, if they put this away and they put this away and then they put it away on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, by Friday they have 25 cents or a dollar or whatever it is, however you do it. But if you have some kind of physical thing where they can see, that may be more comforting in some way.
Mm-hmm. And again, I think it comes down to writing down things. I mean, yeah, you may have a piggy bank there, but if you have something next to it, I remember when I was young, I did this. I always had a running tally as to how much money I had. And then if I decided that I wanted slash needed something, you know, you pull money out of wherever I happen to have my money, then it's kind of interesting when you cross out $12 and now it's $7. It does sometimes cause you to pause and say, okay, now let me assess what I'm going to be spending this on. Even as adults, I would suspect that probably half the adult population really doesn't keep track of how much money they have. For example, you don't have a savings passbook anymore. Remember those days?
Those were so good because it was a tangible thing.
Yes.
It was a little book you could look at. I wonder whether parents could do that, have a little notebook for their kids. Here's the box so that the money's in a box so they can see the money. And you put in so much and you can add it up and so forth. And at, you know, a certain age level, that might be something that would be comforting.
Right. Again, hearing it is not going to put it into their brain. To me, it really does. It comes down to just visualizing everything.
Now, you and we make lists. We write things down. Mm-hmm. Today's younger generations do everything on computers. But the computer's a wonderful place to keep track of spending and budgeting.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's a good place for teaching things like Microsoft Excel. You can just put the numbers in and you can kind of teach them how when you deduct something, it's a subtraction and a formula in a cell. There are a lot of different ways of getting to that, whether it's listing things on the computer or using an actual program to kind of keep track of it.
Like when a young person first gets a credit card, I was thinking, you come home, you take the receipt for what you just spent, and you record right on the computer so you know what that bill is going to be when you're going to get it at the end of the month. I think it's an important thing for young people at some point to have a credit card.
Yes.
To pay on their own.
I recommended my son when he became 21, if you get a credit card, that one gives you some kind of a record as to what you're spending if you actually look at the statement or you keep track of it, as you said, Linda. But it also helps build credit, which is one of those financial literacy things we're talking about in terms of our course. How do you go about building credit? Do you, you just go out and borrow money? Well, it's kind of hard to do if you don't have any history. And that's what getting a credit card will do for you. I told my son when he first got his, just buy something. Take a couple months to pay it off. Most people don't know that. If you pay the entire balance every month, you're really not building any credit because you're just paying off everything. But if they see that, okay, you can pay off $30 a month or some amount, companies look at it and go, okay, you can budget things and actually pay things over a period of time.
It does sound like in the important business of getting a credit card, a teenager needs to have a responsible adult with some kind of oversight plan, because the one thing you don't want is a teenager who real fast ends up having a bad credit rating and then that follows him.
Right. It's easy to do. It's an interesting thing to look at how much interest you're paying and making the connection that, okay, I'm paying $300 a month interest on whatever credit cards or car or whatever long-term loan I'm dealing with, okay, that $300 is doing me absolutely no good. That's going straight to a bank or to a loan company. And that's money that I have earned, but I'll never see, and it'll never do anything useful for me. It's a lesson that when kids look at it, I know when I was in the classroom, I used to talk about that. If you see that number and it's not buying anything, the response is like, really? Yeah, that's dumb. Well, yeah, it is.
I heard a story a few days ago about a young boy who was totally in shock when his parents showed him the bill for the mortgage, the monthly payment for the mortgage. They said, this is how much we have to pay for our home. They didn't say every month or anything like that, and he thought it was an annual payment. And so that was quite a learning experience, too.
Well, this is a conversation that obviously could go on for much longer, but unfortunately we have to bring it to a close. But before we do, are there any resources that you would recommend for parents or other adults who would like to pursue further some of these issues we've been talking about?
A couple of websites that I found that are very good. One is called
giveme20.com.
And it's all one thing, giveme20.com. And it has a lot of advice for parents, and it is advice that is pretty age-specific. It has a lot of good articles and advice. The other one that I found that was quite useful is called FamilyEducation.com. They have all kinds of different ideas in terms of working with children, working with teenagers, and they also have a special money section where it talks about finances with teenagers, finances with young adults, and the like. So I think those are probably the two best things on the web that I have found.
Well, you have certainly been a wonderful resource yourself, so we really appreciate your coming in and helping us discuss how to help kids manage money. So thank you so very much, Brian Crane, for being with us.
Well, thank you very much.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. And please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a big help to us. Tell us, if you can, what station you're tuning into, and please mention show number 386.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. At the end of our program, we often thank individuals or foundations for their generous donations that help with the cost of producing Parents' Perspective programs. Parents' Perspective is a 501c3 nonprofit corporation. Today, it is our turn to thank you, our listeners, for your tax-deductible contributions to our annual fundraising campaign. Please send your check or money order to Parents Perspective Incorporated, Post Office, Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015. And thank you for helping us continue to work for you. Our sound engineer is Nate DeLuca. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.